Hi everyone, Happy New Year. I hope you had a wonderful and safe holiday season and you made the most of however you celebrated. I'm super pumped to be back connecting with all of you. We've got some wonderful guests lined up for the start of 2021. And I'll also be doing more online trainings and workshops all across 2021. So just if you are interested, stay tuned for those announcements. They'll be out soon. And while planning the January calendar for the podcast, I originally wanted to do something around goal setting and wellness. I don't know about you, but I'm always someone who loves to make goals at the start of the year. But I decided to go more of the wellness routes. One of the main things I want to focus on in my personal growth this year is just getting my wellness act together. I want to do a few things differently that I'll talk about in the shows ahead. So I got one of my favorite Ayurveda people on the show today. I chat with Dr. Ram Tamang, a longtime friend and also an Ayurvedic doctor and my Ayurvedic doctor. He's an Ayurvedic physician and a certified high performance coach. He's been practicing Ayurveda for more than 20 years and runs an Ayurvedic clinic in Orange County, California. What I love about Dr. Ram is that he truly believes that health is in your own hands and that each one of us has a responsibility as well as a desire to be healthy for ourselves, our families, and also to live our higher purpose. He's lectured globally on many stages and has been part of many Ayurveda events as well as staff on different Ayurvedic colleges. There's so much that Dr. Ram knows, and he's full of wisdom and knowledge, and he's helped me tremendously over the years with whatever that has come up. And I wanted to chat with him specifically about gut health. It's something I'm trying to learn more about, and it's certainly become a trendy buzzword. But gut health is something that Ayurveda has spoken about for thousands of years. And science is only now proving what has been said in some of these Ayurveda texts sent thousands of years ago. So in today's conversation, I want to call it out more as an introduction to gut health and doshas. We definitely do touch upon doshas. But there's so much that we could have gone into and we could have chatted for like 5 hours. After the microphones turned off, Dr. Ram was telling me how, like in which part of the body is vata and pitta, and the gut health for certain doshas is located in a certain part of the body. And there's just so much more. It's impossible to pack all of it into a 45-minute podcast. But I want to ask you, the listeners, if you are interested in more Ayurvedic content, apart from the yoga stuff, let me know. And I'm happy to bring Dr. Ram back on to talk about other Ayurveda concepts that you may have questions about. Okay. And also, one last thing before I let you go and listen to the interview, Dr. Ram was generous enough to give all the listeners of this show a discount for a virtual personalized consult. I know some of you might be curious to find out, you know, your own doshas, imbalances, and just how to bring Ayurveda into your life. So we do have a discount coupon that's available, and I'll tell you how you can get this at the end of the show. Okay, meanwhile, enjoy the interview. Hi, my name is Arundhati, and you're listening to the Let's Talk Yoga podcast. I'm an ex-Bollywood dancer turned yoga and wellness educator. I've built a six-figure business as an immigrant, woman of color yoga teacher with no business background, no handstands, pure instinct, and the free information found on Google. If you love doing yoga and you dream of teaching it someday, this podcast is for you. We go over everything from doing and teaching yoga to scaling a small business, living a modern yoga lifestyle, and so much more. You'll find interesting, fun, raw conversations along with some tips, tricks, strategies, and insights in this podcast. So grab your cup of chai and let's jump in. Hi, Ram. Welcome to the show. I'm so excited that you're here today.
Thank you, Aru. Thank you for having me on the show.
and I have been friends for a while now, but you've been an Ayurvedic doctor for almost probably 20 years, if I'm not wrong. I've never really asked you this. How did Ayurveda make its way into your life?
Yeah, it's almost 2 decades for sure, you know, especially officially practicing, you know, unofficially just working and playing with the herbs has been almost, you know, when I turned into my teens, I was already learning and playing with the herbs. But, you know, I grew up in the foothills of the Himalayas in Nepal, right? And so growing up with a family of traditional healers and spending time in nature and learning about herbs were a big part of my childhood. Honestly, because, you know, 20 years or even 30 years prior, growing up in the outskirts and the foothills was with a lot of nature. There was a lot of plants, a lot of herbs. You would, you know, your passing time was going out to the woods and jungles and playing with the natural herbs and plants. And so that's how I grew up. So, and then having said that, my high school, I studied in Jiddu Krishnamurti School in Bangalore in India. I'm not sure if you know of him, Jiddu Krishnamurti.
I do. And I actually spent a big chunk of my life in Bangalore. I didn't know about the school, but I do know about Jiddu Krishnamurti.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, he was definitely, his school, like, you know, definitely had a big impact on my childhood and growing up, which really exposed me to the philosophy of questioning. He believed and didn't believe in the standard norms of exams, certifications, and he believed in just exploring, asking questions. And, you know, even amazingly, I don't know, for those of you who have not known about Jiddu Krishnamurti, his schools don't even have these exams, yearly exams.
Oh, wow.
You know, and, you know, so that was his belief and concept. And again, so that really exposed me to the philosophy and questioning and the meaning of life, right? Its purpose and deeper understanding. And when I was considering becoming a doctor and had to choose between this allopathic medicine or Ayurvedic medicine, even though the financial, you know, career prospects were much better with choosing the allopathic medicine, I decided to go with Ayurveda only because the principles and the philosophy and, you know, the wisdom of Ayurveda deeply resonated with me. That's when I moved further south to India to pursue my Ayurvedic medical degree.
Interesting. And I'm curious, is there a difference between being an Ayurvedic? I mean, I'm sure there's a difference between being an Ayurvedic doctor and an Ayurvedic practitioner. So who, if someone is looking for a consult, when would they go to a doctor and when would they go to a practitioner?
I mean, I think that's a great question. You know, it really is about the what are your major concerns? Like, you know, are you dealing with any specific diseases, chronic concerns of issues? So the difference between the two is really the duration and the depth of the education and the scope of practice. So in Indian subcontinent, India, like, you know, Ayurvedic doctors, it's a 6 years full-time medical school. And they are licensed physicians, even though it's not licensed here in the United States, and it's becoming more and more popular around the world, including in the United States. So Ayurvedic physicians is a 6 years university degree, but Ayurvedic practitioners are more versed on education, prevention, and health promotion, focused on lifestyle and diet and, you know, also herbs. So it's about 1,000 to 1,500 hours of education. So that's the difference. Like, yeah, 6 years of full-time university degree and, you know, 1,000 to 1,500 hours of education.
That's a pretty staggering difference. I'm glad you brought that up because so often people end up going to practitioners when they actually probably need to go seek an Ayurvedic doctor. So that's really, I'm glad you clarified that. Now, the first thing that comes to mind for a lot of people, me included, when I think of Ayurveda are, you know, the doshas, because that's the first thing that kind of jumps out at us. And can you briefly explain what are doshas?
Again, another amazing question. I think all of those, you know, so what's these doshas, right? And nowadays, like, okay, what's, there's so many sites and books on what it is exactly. But I think it's really the concept and the principles of the five elements is one of the most fundamental principles in the Ayurvedic science. So these five elements consist of the elements of nature like space, air, fire, water, and earth. And we all know them, experience them, but sometimes we don't think of them as how all of these elements exist in all matters, both organic and non-organic, and how each of these things impacts your psychological tendencies or physiological tendencies, which means your body and your emotions react to everything that you're exposed to. And, you know, as well as our five senses and the various aspects of our body's functioning. So it's not limited to the general body, but literally everything and directly that qualities of the five elements in nature, you know, just the air, the fire, all of those has a direct impact on that. And so these five great elemental qualities in nature combine into these three basic fundamental functional units or the bioenergies or, you know, the functional principles. And what these are called the Vata, Pitta, and the Kapha. And that's what they are called the doshas. Now, you know, what is Vata like, right? And people are always wondering, okay, these three doshas are the Vata, Pitta, and Kapha. Now, what is Vata? Is the bodily principle of air in nature. It is the energy of movement. Mm-hmm. Like Pitta is the principle of fire, the energy of digestion and metabolism and transformation. So it's the quality of the sun and the heat and the fire. And the Kapha is the principles of water and the earth, the energy of lubrication and structure that supports that. And so you can see this in a micro level, on a cellular level, how each of these doshas are there. And then also on a micro and a macro level. So there is that connection between these elements. And so what doshas are nothing but the bioenergetics with which we understand our interconnectedness. Mm-hmm. And we understand our functioning of the body and the thoughts and the mind and the emotions. That's what these doshas are.
So everybody is born with a predominant dosha, right? I mean, from my naive understanding, we have all three doshas in our body, in our lives, but we have a dominance towards one, correct?
You are very right. The beautiful thing about it is these doshas are in every cell. The qualities of the five elements are seen on a simple cellular constituents from nucleus to the cytoplasm and, you know, the cell membrane and the DNA and the RNA and the mitochondria. All of that can be correlated to the qualities of the space, the earth, fire, water, just like Vata, Pitta, and the Kapha. So, and they are all spread throughout the whole system in a macro level. So having said that, it is one of these predominants. They are all there, but at the same time, the combination and the permutations in each and every individual is different. So we are always born with one of these doshas more primary. Mm-hmm. And then there's the other secondary and the other tertiary, you know, combination. Yeah. So yeah, definitely that's a good question. And it is that it is one is more predominant and primary compared to the others.
And because we have this predominance, right? So if I understand correctly, we pay attention to this only when there is an imbalance, or do we kind of do a general maintenance? I'm a little confused as to, do we address the doshas only when something is off? I don't know if that question really makes sense though.
No, I think it's a great question. You know, you have to learn to maintain it every day and be aware of the impacts of the doshas in your body and your thoughts and your emotions every hour of the day. And not just when you're out of balance. In fact, knowing the doshas helps you to prevent from your physiological, you know, the manifestation of a disease. So basically, you're trying to maintain the environment of your internal environment, of your body and your unique constitution. So you have, you know, it's not, yeah. So when there are diseases, then you work on managing the doshas to help heal and renew faster. So basically to heal and treatment protocols. But when there's none and you're feeling amazing, you want to maintain that, because if you continue to add and not pay attention to the doshas, then when it aggravates beyond your physiological increase and decrease of the everyday, then it turns into a disease and pathology.
Makes sense. So how does one discover their dosha? Like for someone listening, they're curious about it. They've heard of these concepts and now they want to discover their dosha. Now, I'm always somebody who likes to caution people, like you don't trust everything that you find on the internet. So what would you suggest as a doctor for 20 years? Do they come to you? Do they go to a practitioner? Do they read a book? How does one start discovering their dosha?
Again, I think it's just such great questions, you know, especially if you are a complete beginner and you know, it might just help you to just get an idea and get you excited. And, you know, sometimes just reading on what is this unique Ayurvedic mind-body constitutional type, or finding your mind-body type, you know, in Ayurveda, they called it the unique nature, your prakriti, your unique nature, right? So when you are able to find that, and how do you discover that? One is really, as you start to know what are the things to look for, you know, with the questionnaires that might be there, it might be very general, but it's a good intro to you. And once you know that and you want to go a little bit more in deeper to really make it personalized for yourself. And so that, you know, it's applicable, implementable, not just that, you know, little knowledge, you get excited and then it's fizzled out. But when you are able to do that difference, then you might want to go to a practitioner and an Ayurveda physician who might be able to assess your unique constitution based on their specialty of looking at the pulse. And especially right now, pulse is not going to be it, but, you know, asking the right questions, not limited to just the tendencies of the past 3 months, but asking histories about your, you know, your tendencies, your strengths, your weaknesses, and your responses and reactions, all that. And there's a lot of these questionnaires that can actually help you to determine your unique constitution. And to get a specific one, the Ayurvedic physicians are trained in those other assessment assessment using the tongue, using, you know, looking at your body structure, listening to your tone of the voice and your tendencies as a child. And sometimes they even go into your congenital history, and all of that determines your, you know, unique constitution or the mind-body type. So, yeah. So depending on your level of the interest and level of how far you want to go to make it, you know, implementable and practical, you can start by reading a little bit. And one thing is, we can also share, you know, if you're interested, you know, reach out to us and mention this podcast, and we can actually send you what we use and a questionnaires to determine your mind-body constitutional type too. And then if you want to be even more sure, then visiting a practitioner or a physician is a great idea.
That's wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. I'll also link to your practice and where people can find you in our show notes. But there's a topic that I've been hearing a lot about, and that's what I wanted to really talk to you about. It's so much buzz around gut health. And it seems like I'm hearing about it in the past year a lot, or it's always been around and I'm just paying attention to it now. And I'm curious, what is gut health? And do the doshas play a role in our gut health?
I think this is so amazing, because you're right. And it's really becoming a big buzz in the modern medical world based on the different modalities of practices and the recent scientific, you know, world. But because for them, until now, they didn't connect your digestion and your gut health, you know, had anything to do with disease manifestation. And really, I mean, when you look at it, I mean, it's so amazing that medical, you know, I have a lot of medical, you know, colleagues, medical doctors who are colleagues, and they say there's very little correlation to your gut health and your diet and nutrition. But in Ayurveda, we've always said that the digestive system is your master system. To almost everything, we link it back to your digestive system. And the amazing thing is the gut health is what, you know, the gut health is about really starting from what your thought process is, what you ingest from your oral cavity all the way to when the elimination or the rectum, large intestine, rectum and anal areas, right? So it's a whole system that's considered the gut health. And so it's really about what you digest, assimilate, absorb, and eliminate. And even beyond what you eat, it's also what we think about and what we digest and interpret our perceptions, you know, and how that things that you see and things that you hear and things that you're exposed to and touch through all your five senses as well. Mm-hmm. So one of the main thing about it is that what I want to share is that Ayurvedic medical sciences have always emphasized the importance of the whole gut health completely, and how everything that we're exposed to and what we do, how we do our actions, has a direct and indirect impact on the gut health. It literally, I mean, many of you, I'm sure, as aware of it, when for yourself, what, like, you know, the what you drink right before mm-hmm. your meal, or what you take with your meals or after meals, and how much you take, when you take, and your state of emotional state of being, all that also makes a difference. If you don't eat on time, like your body's, like a lot of us know that it starts to gurgle and make sounds and things like that. You know, and then if you have just taken a glass of water, your hunger and your appetite is reduced. Right. And then under stress, you know, how our gut reacts, like, you know, you feel the gut discomfort, the gurgling, the uncomfort and the discomfort that you feel on your gut level. And if you overeat, also, it kind of, you know, makes you feel bloated, heavy, discomfort, all that, as well as if you don't eat on time. And some things that has worked for a short while, in the long term, it doesn't work. So everything is linked back to the gut health in Ayurveda. And what gut health is really all the way from what you ingest through your five senses to how you process it in terms of food, how you interpret it in terms of your thoughts, and how you react based on your interpretation and perceptions, and how you digest, which means how your body is helping you to build, repair, or adding to more toxicities. All that goes back to the main core value of the gut health. I don't know if that was a little too broad and too much of information.
No, but, it's great. You know? No. Okay. It's great, yes. Because I know it's hard to like pack everything into this podcast. I have two follow-up questions to what you just said.
Yes.
First one is, I'm guessing stress is a big factor when we're talking about gut health, like a lot of stress has negative impact, correct?
Very much so. And you are very, very right. The reason why I say it is, Ayurvedically, we've always said every emotions that you're feeling, mm-hmm. I don't know if you've been aware of that, you know, when you're feeling sad, you lack appetite and you don't mm-hmm. feel like eating. When you are angry and upset and you are distracted, like restless, mm-hmm. your body is not able to digest it well enough. Under stress, you know, when you're on the fight, flight, and the fright, your mm-hmm. body is not producing or digesting and metabolizing the food that mm-hmm. you're ingesting. So stress really has that impact, whether in terms of thinking, you know, in terms of the nervous system, the parasympathetic and the sympathetic, right? When mm-hmm. you rest, you digest. The parasympathetic system is considered that way, you know, that when rest and digest. And today, science is also saying that your happy hormones, serotonin, 97% of it is found in your gut.
Oh, really? So,
yeah, 90 plus percent of the serotonin is in your gut. A lot of the time, even the medical students that I know of, medical practitioners, nurses, all this, they think, oh, it's in the brain. But the amazing, fascinating thing is it is in your gut. Every thoughts and the feelings and the emotions impacts our gut health.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And, you know, the neurotransmitters, like, you know, it is found significantly produced and stored in your gut, a major, like, neurotransmitters. Mm-hmm. So having said that, yes, I think stress has a direct impact on it. And we all know that, like, maybe we are not aware of it. But then when you gently listen, the first thing that gets in terms of your circulation, when you're under stress, the one system that shuts itself is your gut. The blood supply to is completely reduced. The minute when you're under stress, you don't breathe and you use shallow breath. And then shallow breath sends a message to your gut. That's the first system that shuts itself. Isn't that fascinating and amazing?
It is. It is fascinating. And it's also a bit scary because you're like, oh my gosh, I have to make sure I do or make lifestyle changes to make sure, you know, my gut is not being negatively impacted. Like when you were speaking, I was thinking of how even things, small things like watching TV when we eat or slumping in our couch and, you know, feeding ourselves meal, all of this is also not probably the best way to go about feeding ourselves. But anyway, that was just a straight thought running in my head.
It's a great point though. It literally, like, you know, your posture will, your posture and your attention while eating can totally, you know, reduce your circulation and the flow of the digestive juices and the production of the digestive enzymes and the balance between the symbiotic balance between the good bacteria being ready to help you with your digestion. You know, that's a fascinating thing. So Ayurvedically, stress was something that made you, we call it the wind, which was making you worry or hurry and, you know, rush. That kind of, it's like it's excessive wind of the vata that puts off the tiny flame of fire. The fire, yes, which is supposed to help you with your digestion in your gut health, gets put off. And so, yeah, I think it's fascinating that you brought about that link to it.
Yeah. My second follow-up question to this was, Is our gut health affected by the seasons? I mean, I know depending on where people live, you may experience these seasons more strongly or not. But is gut affected by seasons?
Yes, absolutely. The amazing thing about it is Ayurveda has always talked about it. But in the study, in the world's, you know, most prestigious journals, Nature researchers at Stanford University identified over 100 microbial and on for, sorry, 1,000 microbial and molecular seasons variations in the human over 4 years, literally, and suggesting much of our health and longevity depends on our connection to the seasons.
Oh, really?
Think
oh,
about
wow.
it. Yeah.
That's fascinating.
So fascinating. Right. But this was something that Ayurveda has always talked about. That is why they used to talk about, you know, it's not just your daily routines and your daily habits, what you do and how you do it at the different parts of the day in order to create your habit in sync with the rhythm of the day to amplify and maximize your strength and to reduce the negative impacts and of your weaknesses and the stress around us. And so, like, for example, you know, there are diseases which is more predominant during the seasons of fall or, you know, winter, right? And then there are like allergies. Mm-hmm. I mean, we say allergies, you know, seasons, it's a seasonal thing, allergies and like skin rashes, acidity, heartburns, you know, that is more, and that anger and frustration, acidity is more predominant during summer. And then, you know, you start to feel more depressed, heavy, sad during, you know, winter. So yes, science has shown us that now there are different bacteria and more predominant during different seasons, or good bacteria in our gut during different seasons. And even the enzymes used in digesting, whether it is complex carbohydrate, grains, or, you know, the fats, all of that are more predominant, you know, during different seasons. Like there are during winter and in a latter part of the fall, the grain, heavy food digesting, grain digesting enzymes are far more predominant. And isn't that fascinating? For me, like it is really fascinating because Ayurvedic science has always talked about that every season.
It is.
There is a seasonal routine, right? And seasonally, you have to eat seasonal foods. Mm-hmm. But for many people today, they're not even aware of that. And so it'd be, oh my God, that's a big revelation now. Oh, we didn't know that's, you know, the seasons can impact your gut health. But Ayurveda has always said, you must change your diet according to the season, according to your predominance of the doshas in your body. And so, you know, this is not a new concept and a principle, but like how you said, this is becoming more prevalent and people are literally, the science is proving the ancient wisdoms of Ayurveda.
So true. I just want to ask you, how old is Ayurveda?
So, you know, it's almost 5,000 to 6,000 years old. It was a traditions that was there predominant. It's one of the world's most oldest medical science, still continuously, you know, one of the oldest science that has been mm-hmm. continuously practiced, according mm-hmm. to even the WHO. It's a complete system. Again, it has its own principles of pathogenesis, pathology, its own assessment and diagnostic tools, and its own treatment protocols. So it's an ancient science, but the books written about them dates back to 3,000 to 3,500 years.
So who would be, is there a father of Ayurveda? Like in yoga, we refer to a few people. Is there like a father of Ayurveda or a founder?
The modern day Ayurveda, let's put it that way, like, you okay. know, which was, you know, so there's an Ayurveda books that refers to ancient surgeries, like a general, you know, it talked about all eight branches of, you know, medicine. Mm-hmm. And this is like a books that's been written 3,000 years ago, like, you know, Charaka Samhita is considered the father of the general medicine of Ayurveda. And then Susruta was the Ayurvedic physician who is considered the father of Ayurvedic surgery. And today, the modern surgeries are really like offshoot of that. And when you look at it, you know, there's been the like what you call these documentations and books, which shows those very old, you know, advanced mm-hmm. tools in Ayurveda, what they use for mm-hmm. surgery. But yes, Susruta was considered the father of surgery in Ayurveda, and the Charaka Samhita is considered the father of the general practice.
Got it. Yeah. I was just curious, so I had to throw that in there. Talking of gut health again, do you have any advice or suggestions for people who have, say, a certain dosha? Is there any advice for people with vata dominance, pitta dominance, kapha dominance?
So yes, I think again, it's going to be a general tips, right? And I think what I want you to understand, it's a whole medical system. It looks at it from, you know, goes far deeper than just the doshas, but doshas are the basic and the fundamental and the foundation. So yes, based on my tip here would be first and foremost, like know your Ayurvedic mind-body constitutional type, you know, just figure out. And what do you see based on the qualities of the vata? What's vata? You know, the tendencies of the qualities, the energies of the wind. It's light, mm-hmm. it's very mobile. It's the energy of the movement, right? Is that like the movement, how it makes your different system in your body move, the movement of your heart, the pumping of the heart, the moving of the lungs, the peristaltic movement of your whole gut health, all mm-hmm. of that is vata. And in the metabolism, transformation, ability to digest, like, for example, you know, when you think about the fire and the pitta, it's how your body is able to metabolize, transform the apple and the food you ingest and turn into the microscopic, you know, cellular, you know, constituent to make what makes up you. So having said that, like, you know, yes, so the qualities of the vatas is going to be the qualities of the wind. It's cold, dry, mobile. Mm-hmm. So you always use the principles of like increases like and the opposite decreases it. So when you're feeling like if you have a predominance of vata in you, right? So that is like you are feeling a little bit more chilly, extremities, dryness, and because dryness and then there is stiffness, then you think of it as creating some warming. When you're cold, you're warm. When you're dry, you're moistened. And what would be the qualities? Maybe oil in your body. And that would be for vata. But if you're feeling a lot of excessive heat in the body, you have to look at saying, am I, you know, in my day, through what I do and the spices and the diet, adding more heat and increasing more heat? And how, like, you know, the acidity or heartburns or skin rashes. Some people you ask, like, I really always feel my body's, I feel hot inside. And so when you feel that, you have to avoid spices and things that adds to the heat. You have to avoid activities that will increase more heat, like high intensity workouts, high intensity thing, working out during the midday, you know, adding a lot of heating, you know, fermented food or pungent spices, or, you know, taking like the red meats, which has a heating effect. So all of that needs to be reduced if you feel that you have a little bit of the excess heat and the fire energy predominance. And if you have like, you know, kapha energy, which is a little bit more dull, sluggish, you have a little bit of, slow metabolism and you are starting to add on weight, then you have to think about the opposite qualities, like increases. Like, so you don't want to add heavy food and, you know, slow activities. You need something that pumps up your heart and makes you go a little bit more cardio, maybe, you know, jump a little and push yourself to, you know, little heating spices like, you know, ginger, black pepper, cinnamon, mm-hmm. and rosemary and other spices that has a little garlic, you know, so that kind of breaks the phlegm, the quality of the water and the earth elements. And so that's how you think of it. So for kapha, you know, if it is that, then you think about it's cold. So you need warming. It's dense. So you want something that'll break open that, loosen the molecules in it.
Got it.
Pitta is heating. So cooling and calming. Vata is cold and dry. So you have to think warm and moist. So that's how you think about it.
So essentially, it's like the opposite to bring in the balance.
Correct.
Absolutely. Something, right? That's what it sounded like. It's really interesting. It's fascinating. I have a lot of moms who listen to this show. And yes. I couldn't get away with it if I don't ask you about kids and gut health. And kids and dosha. I'm assuming since everybody is born with a dosha, right? And do doshas change as kids grow up?
It's a great question. You know, a lot of people make that mistake saying, does my constitution change? Mm-hmm. I would say your constitution does not change. But depending on your epigenetics, your environment, you know, your exposure, that changes the impacts and the effects and the outcome. But your constitution does not change. Your unique mind-body constitution that you're born with, your genes, your hereditary doesn't change, but your overall outcome of health or disease is really the whole environmental factors that what you're exposed to throughout your life.
Got it.
So the epigenetics of it, I am not sure if, you know, any of you are, you know, aware of the epigenetics, which is really your environment, your social, you know, exposures, your habits and the things that you have been exposed to as a kid and, you know, things, all of that has a more of an impact on it.
I'm just curious. This has really got nothing to do with our conversation, but do you have a lot of parents bringing their kids for consultations?
You know, like, yes, I do. I do have a lot of kids, including some infants. And it's fascinating to see beautifully like their reactions and how they react to the things around. Some of them have like, you know, loose bowels happening. And then some of them have skin rashes and some of them are like born underweight or, you know, and so that all gives us already the hints of their predominant dosha in them. So some are like, you know, literally born with, you know, large, over, you know, pounds more, mm-hmm. and some are underweight and overweight, and some of them have a little bigger bulk, you know, bone frames, even as a child. Mm-hmm. And so all that, you know, helps with that to determine. And also you will see the digestive, you know, because we're talking about the digestive with the kids that who come, you are able to determine their constitution right from, you know, when they are infants. And that really helps us to plan as parents, mm-hmm. to plan and expose them to the things that, and then watch and observe their, you know, the reactions to it. It's so beautiful that because as you start to know that, like a lot of the time, simple changes that you can do in the way that you like use your herbs and spices and the changes, slight, very small little changes in your diet can have a profound effect on the overall general health of a little infant and a child. So yes, I do see that. And always parents are always amazed by this. Oh my God, little thing that I did, you know, had changed the way he is and his reactions and his, you know, like the burping and his, you know, mm-hmm, like the mm-hmm. elimination and the flatulence. Yeah, so it does make a difference.
It's really heartwarming to hear that even, you know, infants can benefit from Ayurveda. Now, speaking of parents, is there a difference between, say, for a man and a woman, gut health? Is there a difference when you treat a man versus when you treat a woman? I know there's a difference, but what I'm trying to ask is one gender more susceptible to more gut health issues?
That's a great question. There's subtle differences that as you start to practice, you know, you will become more aware of it. Again, depending on the different geographical locations, depending on different parts of the world, that's where I think the seasonal impacts really shows so predominantly based on the concept and the principles used in Ayurveda. So yes, I do see a difference in a very subtle way. And now, if you look at it, medical science is discovering that, oh, there is a slight differences, you know, in the your brain and the way it is, and which is more enlarged or which is more developed compared to woman's brain and, you know, men's brain. Woman's like the urinary system or the men's urinary system, you know, men's heart and woman's heart. So there is definitely a physiological and anatomical differences, very little, very subtle, and how we get impacted. And like, you know, same thing, you know, that's why there are all these books that comes up, which how men think and women think is so different, and how we react to everything is very different. So when we're talking about that, does it have a different impact on the gut? Very much so. So that's the link between what Ayurveda says. So there is definitely that slight differences in terms of the when you go into the subtleties of it, whether you call it because of the hormones or whether because of just the simple qualities and based on the basic fundamental human needs and desires, how it was structured through the evolutionary time. Does that have an impact? Yes, it definitely has an impact. And I'm sure we all see that in the way we respond to a certain situation, certain food, we are able to, the quantity of food that we eat as men and women, you know, all of that. Yes, absolutely. So I definitely feel there is a subtle differences.
Got it.
Great
Got
question, it. Aru. I think it's I know we think that like, okay, does this question make sense? But I think it is something so subtle, but so beautiful and so profound. So absolutely.
Because for me, it was just, I was just thinking of, you know, like Kartik's gut health and my gut health and Munch's gut health. For anyone listening who doesn't know who Munch is, it's my 3-year-old German Shepherd. You know, actually, I think, yes. Have I told you, Munch actually goes to a veterinarian who is also an Ayurvedic doctor. And he's been
amazing.
He's had a lot of GI issues over the years, and it's
beautiful.
He's on herbs, like a bunch of herbs. Don't ask me which ones, because Karthik handles all of it.
Okay.
But he's on herbs, and for the past year and a half, and all those supplements he's been getting, his health has been great. So yeah, I never knew until like recently that you can actually take your dog to like your pets to an Ayurvedic doctor. I didn't know this.
So amazing. It just, you know, the thing about it is right now, even I have at least a couple dozen pets, mostly dogs, but cats as my clients and patients. You know, the fascinating thing about it, for me, it was natural, right? I grew up in the hills with a lot of animals. So having seen how like my, you know, granny and my parents used herbs to treat our goats and dogs. And so for me, it was very natural. And I, you know, started this was more like, I never thought I would have, you know, pets as my clients, but I do, like, you know, one after another, you know, when the pets were using, like, started with one, you know, one of my students who wanted to say, okay, is there in Ayurveda that, you know, like you also, we treat animals. I said, yeah, there is Pashu Chikitsa, which is everything to do with Ayurveda. It is to treat, you know, Ayurvedic veterinarians. And so when she was like, oh my God, you know, would you be able to check? And then it started, and then people, you know, start. And then now I have at least a couple dozen pets, you know, dogs as my patients.
Oh,
from wolf dog to mini, you know, smart.
You know, when you were saying, thinking back, I think a couple of years ago, I think you probably told us about how Ayurveda can be used on pets in a conversation over dinner. I think so. I'm trying to go back in memory, but I think it was probably you who told us. I have one final question before I let you go for today. And this is completely off script, okay? Just so you know.
Yes.
Is there one Ayurveda ritual that you cannot live without?
The self-abhyanga. You know, which is the self-massaging. of your body and basically getting in touch with your body from head to toe every day, with the oil, without the oil. A lot of the Ayurvedic practitioners and physicians, they always say, you must do it with the oil. Agreed. But as, you know, busy parents, as, you know, busy professionals, sometimes we don't have the time. But what I always recommend is the unique concept and the principles of Ayurveda, where they say health is swastha. Swa means self and stha means your connection to yourself, your connection to your deeper you, your body, your breath, and your, you know, emotions. So having said that, throughout the day, connecting with your body is one among the first ritual that I feel has been the essential part of my life that keeps my health going, improving my circulation, lymphatic system, keeps me being more intentional throughout the day to be, you know, connected to my body. And so it really helps me with that. I think that's something that I would encourage all the listeners, you know, to just follow on that just throughout the day, which means it could be every 2 hours, every 3 hours, you know, 1 or 2 minutes to just tap into your body from head to toe and just massage, squeeze. I like that. And then if you are able to commit to saying, you know what, I feel great with that. I have more energy. I feel amazing. And I feel more present, engaged, you know, in my own body. Then I would even encourage saying, now, based on your body type, try the warm oil one time a day, or at least 2 times a week, or at least, yeah, so once a week. And when you see the effect of that, it actually helps you create a more of a rhythm. It creates you, you know, align, and it gives you a deeper quality sleep. And so remember, ultimately, it comes down to your quality of sleep. Your quality of sleep impacts your lifestyle, which means mm-hmm. your daily routines. And then your daily routines impacts your quality of sleep. So it's, yeah, it's everything. And then that impacts your emotions. And, you know, it's almost like when you don't sleep well, you're more snappy and more reactive, mm-hmm. you know. So all of those. So yes, coming back to it, self-massage.
Wonderful.
That's definitely one of my biggest takeaway for you.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Dr. Ram, thank you. This has been amazing.
I am so glad that
you came and shared with all of us. And I can't wait for the listeners to listen to this. I will make sure to link to you and all your resources and how people can get in touch with you in the show notes. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much again for having me. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you are now inspired to pay a little more attention to your gut health. The coupon I was talking about is a $30 discount on an initial consult with Dr. Ram, a virtual consult, and you can find the link to access that at letstalk.yoga. And I hope you are able to bring more Ayurveda into your life in 2021. As always, thank you for all the support. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast. And enjoy and happy new year. I'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.